The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Faro's Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Podcast, newly opened at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-483-0002.
We hear things in the deep, dark night. We see things in the shadows, in the corners of our eyes. In mind and dim light, we sense things when they just aren't right. Our dealings are not with human flesh and bone, but rather with an essence that defies even the basic laws of nature, like space and time. These elusive selves challenge our logical minds, forcing us to take faith in the unseen, the unsubstantiated. We cling to theory, statistical inevitability, and the imminent manifestation of mystery. Brought to you by WKTV, I'm one of your ghost hosts, Wayne Preston Curtis Thomas. Welcome to another episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. As always, we ask that you please keep an open mind about things that you might not easily believe as we explore the mysterious. We have an incredible paranormal resource with us tonight for our guest, and that's how I've always described Brandon.
Yeah.
Incredible resource when it comes to the paranormal. My co-host?
Everybody, I'm Brandon Jose of Jose History Productions YouTube channel. Jose is spelled H-O-E-Z-E-E.
Brandon's still doing some ghost hunting. This is a ghost hunting show tonight. I'm glad to report that. Brandon branched off, did some Bigfoot investigation, and I branched off, joined MUFON. So we got off track for a while, but not tonight. We have an award-winning author of the paranormal. She's authored at least four books that I know about. She did the series, Haunted Travels of Michigan. It's a three-book series. This is what she won awards for. And then also, one of my all-time favorite books, Stepping into Darkness. I use this as a resource. There's a lot of stuff out of this book that I've adopted. But tonight's guest, besides being an award-winning author, she's a great historian, researcher. Please welcome to the show, Kathleen Rydell Tetson.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Wayne, for that great introduction. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Now, I guess we need to hear about your journey. You did a journey, a 12-year journey, over 10,000 miles per year of travels through Michigan, the state of Michigan. So you and your writing partner, rest in peace, I'm sure you're going to mention her tonight, could do this series. But tell us about your journey and about your sister, too, please.
Sure. Well, my sister, Bev Rydell, she and I were best friends since birth. We did all kinds of things together, all kinds of journeys. But when we started into the paranormal journey, it was probably one of our more unique adventures. And as you mentioned, over a period of about 11 or 12 years, we traveled across the U.S. investigating and researching accounts of unexplained phenomena. But our primary focus during that time was Michigan. And I think in that period of time, we averaged well over 300 investigations. Unfortunately, she passed away from cancer in 2015. But I still continue that journey that we began way back then. And what we found out, you know, we started off kind of skeptical. We'd never had a real paranormal experience. At least at that time, I didn't think I'd had one, but we thought most of what we'd heard or read about was nonsense. And it took us 12 years to realize, nope, there is something out there. It's not as prevalent as most people think it might be, But there is something out there that we can't explain. And I've continued since then. It's fascinating. It's interesting, sometimes a little unsettling, but always interesting. So
your journey was to find the truth.
Yes.
And you, you weren't afraid to say in your books, if you didn't find any paranormal activity, you just spelled it right out for the reader.
See, that's the thing that is missing too often today. My sister and I, as I mentioned, went well over 300 investigations. And of that, we only had about 35 or 40 cases we couldn't explain. So we were very skeptical. And yes, I am not afraid to say to this day that I'm sorry, I got nothing.
Right.
And I think people need to be aware that a paranormal investigation isn't always what you see on TV, where almost every episode they uncover something paranormal.
Right.
Most cases, you get nothing, and that's typical. Or you can explain it. That's the important part.
Yeah. Not only were you dedicated, you're honest, and what you said, a very important thing is objective.
Yes. Yes. You know, too often we lose our common sense in this field. We lose our objectivity. And we're so eager to find the Holy Grail, you know, the spirit moving across the camera, that that objectivity needs to be reevaluated from time to time. But, you know, I am a believer, yet still a skeptic. That's just the way I am.
We're all seeking that validation and that confirmation, right? I used to use Occam's razor, and that the simplest solution is usually the best. And also, my side biased, I was careful about trying to line up the evidence just to support the items I wanted. Yeah, I tried to do that. I'd like to make this maybe a little basic ghost hunting, because in Travels in Michigan, the two that I have, you talk about terms, and then you also talk about a ghost hunting 101.
Sure.
So I'd like to talk about the basics for the ghost hunters out there, especially the people are just starting out.
Okay.
You recognize, or you said they're intelligent and residual, the two main types of hauntings. You want to explain those a little bit?
Sure. Intelligent means there is a consciousness that exists, that is capable of understanding what you're saying and responding to questions. That occurs rarely, but it does occur. Residual is almost like repeating, like filming a movie and the movie repeats itself. It may be an event that happened at a location where this energy does not have consciousness. It is just repeating an act that happened, I don't know, 10 years ago, 100 years ago, 500 years ago. And so one is intelligent and the other is just a repeat without any conscious response.
I've actually renamed these.
Okay.
So for intelligent, I renamed it to a spiritual haunting.
Yes.
And residual to a historical haunting.
I can see that, even though some spiritual hauntings are historic.
Right.
You know, if the conscious energy dates to 1856, that's historical too.
But what separates the two is the interaction. If that spirit is actually sees you, talks to you, acknowledges you somehow.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Now you say, and this is what I read also, that you're more likely to run into a residual haunting.
Yes. That is more commonly experienced on investigations, even though I will say that there's also, if you pay close enough attention, you will also get some conscious energy too, but it is a little more rare than residual, at least in my experience.
And then I don't know that Brandon and I found that out, because we seem like we were always getting EVPs that seemed like they were talking to us.
Yes.
That's our... just seemed like it, but I think go ahead.
It depends on the location, but it just depends on the location, I guess. I just think in my experience, there's been more residual. In other words, there may be a voice heard, but it's not responding to a question.
Right.
You know?
And then I think
I think it's location and like if they're there or want to interact, because
absolutely,
I bet
yes.
some locations it's just
yes
go activity going all night. Another time you go to that same location, it's just quiet, nothing going on. So
that's the thing I can't understand.
Yeah.
I've been to, there's a place called Bath, Michigan, where a terrible school bombing happened, and we investigated the cemetery there and various locations in Bath three or four times over a three-year period. And it was the third time we got crazy, crazy activity at the cemetery. And it's like, why that day? That's what those of us in the paranormal still don't understand. I've also found some places I found incredibly active can be over-investigated.
Oh.
You know, you get a lot of you may have a lot of activity, fairly consistent, but then more and more people come and investigate it, and suddenly it vanishes, whether that's because it's been over-investigated or some other phenomena occurs, we don't know. But that's also something else I've found.
Yeah, maybe somebody came in and smudged. But you sent me an EVP.
I think it mm-hmm. could be, too, though, that they could just be tired of doing it.
Like, oh, yeah.
It's like you yes. want us to perform no, every no. night. I'm not doing it anymore.
That's right.
It's like, you know, I can just see, oh, God, here come the ghost hunters again.
Right. You sent me an EVP from Bath. A little tiny girl's voice.
Yes.
One of your investigators had asked, who was your favorite teacher?
Yes.
And the response is, and it's an intelligent response, Mrs. Hart.
Yes.
Yeah, I wish that would play, but you know, these EVPs just don't play that well.
Yeah, that's what I found on Zoom. And in presentations, sometimes the speakers aren't good enough.
Right.
But yeah, it was really, that was probably one of the purest interactions I've had in all the investigations.
Oh.
And the most shocking.
Right.
Because
just creepy, gives you goosebumps.
Well, it does, especially when you can connect the EVP to an actual person connected to that person, you know, the entity. And, you know, I've gotten that two or three times in all the investigations I've been on. And that's when you can really validate something, when you can connect what you hear or record with an event. And in that case, it was stunning.
Yeah, because Mrs. Hart was a real teacher.
Yes,
so
the day of the bombing.
Yeah,
yes.
Everything added up. And it, yes. wasn't a voice that came out of somebody else's mind that was there.
Right.
Right. It was an actual EVP of a little girl that died in that Bath
yes.
massacre.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought up Bath, because that was on my list.
Okay.
Yeah. And oh man. EVPs, you talk about EVPs in your book under Ghost Hunting 101 or your definitions, mm-hmm. and you talk about a rating system A, B, C.
Mm-hmm. C, an EVP is C level, when you can hear that it's a voice, but you can't make out what it says. And I think that incorporates quite a few EVPs. B means it can be heard at least by one or two people, but by the majority of people, you can't really, it's not that clear. And a class A is that rare EVP like Mrs. Hart, where more people can hear it without you having to tell them what it says.
Yeah.
And that's very rare, but that's very defining.
Without having to enhance it or slow it down.
Yeah, like between like the A and the B too. Because like a lot of times a B is like everybody can hear it's a voice, but you might disagree on what exactly is being said. Whereas like an A, like everybody's going, yep, it says that. Like
that's what it says.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So EVPs with classifications A, B, C. Now, I've ran into at least five different ways that people are categorizing EVPs now.
Mm-hmm.
And by types, 1A, 1B, actually A, B, C, D, and
okay.
then one had G for garbage. And then,
well, that's most EVPs, actually.
I know. And then one had R for reverse. You only got an EVP if you played it in reverse.
Right, right.
So
well, there's no school on EVPs, yeah. Unfortunately. There's so I guess you can come up with anything you want. I know there is a belief or a theory that the other side is a reverse of what we see here. And that comes from the mirror theory. You know, some people believe that mirrors can contain memories or energy or reveal the opposite side of what we live in. And so I think the reverse is based on that theory. Is it true? I don't know.
Oh, I never heard that. Had you heard that, Brandon? About the?
Oh, could you repeat that again? Sorry.
About the mirrors.
It's like a mirror is the reverse image. And some people believe that spirit energy can be contained in a mirror, but it's the reverse of this world. So the reverse image means that when spirits communicate, their words are reversed, which I'm not one to say no, but I don't know.
I've never played enough of mine. Like, I know at least out of my EVPs, usually the ones that were clear, it's pretty telling that it's forward and not back. And I'm saying they can't communicate that way.
But exactly.
The mirror things I've definitely have heard of it being more kind of like a portal.
Yes.
And stuff like
yes.
that, too. Because yes. that's like a lot of times they used to cover the mirrors.
That's correct.
I know back in the day, too, as part of like the funeral process or right. whatever.
We had a lot of them where you had to slow them down to really hear them good.
Well, there are some EVPs I have that I need to slow down because many times they're very quick. And you need to slow them down to hear the words.
Right.
But as long as I can hear that there's a voice there, slowing down is more for my benefit.
Right.
To try and understand what it says. And, you know, reducing the white noise in it is also something else, a filter I will use, but it's not always effective. I don't think most of our audio software can do that really well without losing some of the audio.
Right. So if you're a ghost hunter out there, it may be necessary to take your recordings and put them into some kind of a program
yes.
where you can do different things with them to change them. Now you talk about VP.
What is it?
VP, just voice phenomena or.
VP, yes, voice phenomena, yes. That is something I've encountered on a couple of investigations, and that is where you actually hear the entity. You can hear their words. You can record it on an audio recorder, but you can actually hear it. And that's a little startling, you know, when you're in an abandoned place and it's just you and one other person, and you hear the voice, like, close to you.
Yeah, Brandon does it all the time. He's
Who
the
does?
Best at that than anyone I know.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You
He's
know,
got
I
good hearing.
There are some people who I call paranormal antennas that have that kind of energy around them that draws entities to them.
Yeah.
I've seen people like that. You know, we go to a location, we get nothing, and then we bring our antenna with us.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll record EVPs.
Yeah, because a lot of times I'd be like, okay, stop there. Or at least I would tag it, like, play this spot, something just said
yes.
something. Or we'd
yes.
go back and listen back to it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We had a female on my first team who got more EVPs than anybody. And
yeah.
I don't know, she seemed innocent. She was a female. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Maybe less aggressive or kept her mouth shut more than I did, maybe. I don't know. But she really picked up a lot of EVPs.
Good. Well, she could be one of those antennas.
I think so.
Energy around us is like a fingerprint or like a magnet. That's probably a better thing. And, you know, depending on the spirit energy and the magnetism in them, it can draw them in or repel them. So, and all of our energy is very unique to us. If you've ever seen auras, it's very different from person to person. And I just think sometimes the energy connects with the energy in a room.
Yeah, I think right person, right place, right time. But
yes.
VP, I had never heard that. And we had talked about it before, so now we have a term for it.
Yes.
Voice phenomena. Now, if you hear it with your ears and then you record it, now is it an EVP?
No.
Oh.
An EVP is only something that can be heard on an audio device, an audio recording device. You can't hear it.
Like a ghost box?
If you hear it, it's, Well, the ghost box is a whole different thing. You know, most ghost box sessions I've encountered, if you hear a word or words, you can hear it because it's loud enough.
Right.
Seldom do you record an EVP on a ghost box. You can hear it. Well, you can record it on a recorder, but you generally hear it because it's louder.
Right. Yep. How about a fear cage? I think that's an important thing that you had in one of those books.
Yes. That is something that is really important. A lot of paranormal investigators don't think about. We have been in locations where there's a high level of electronic bleed. Basements are crazy like that because you have all the wiring from the house going through the basement. That's when you have high levels of electromagnetic fields in a relatively consolidated area. And you can become delusional with high enough levels of EMF. I know when I'm encountering high EMF because I'll start getting a little dizzy, more so than normal. but when you have high levels of EMF, you can become delusional where you might see something or think you hear something when nothing actually exists. Yeah.
Hallucinations.
Yes.
Even from
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's like living underneath the power lines.
Yes. And in fact, there was one case, a couple of cases I investigated, not in the book, but these are other cases, where a woman was seeing apparitions in her room. And when we went to her room, we had our EMF meters and we found out she had a TV in her room and like a mini surround sound system with like a little music box next to her bed. That was generating major EMF. I mean, skyrocketed. So we had to turn off the TV, unplug it, remove that little radio thing she had by her bed. The apparitions disappeared.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good example. Mm-hmm. You talked about the Allegan County Museum, the old jail, and how when we were there too, every time the heat would come on, my EMF detector would go off.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, a lot of the equipment that we have is very flawed, unfortunately. EMF meters are certainly one of them. I mean, there are some that are more specific to natural EMF, but most of the traditional EMF meters used today pick up that kind of a bleed, and we can misinterpret what they mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it, too, is because we're using tools that were designed for other purposes.
Absolutely.
And then
we're trying to
use them in ghost hunting. But
yes.
Like, that's not what it was designed to do.
No, and a lot of people using the equipment don't really understand that.
Yeah.
And they get excited when they get EMF levels that are super high, which is cool. But, you know, when you find the EMF level is consistently high, that usually means there's a bleed somewhere. And you can be in the middle of the woods and get high EMF, consistent high. I was on Mackinac Island and we were on one of the back trails on Mackinac. And we were getting high EMF, and it's like, it has to be real because there's nothing around us.
Right.
But then I found out at Mackinac Island, we're on a higher level on Mackinac Island, you know, hills. So we are in one of the highest level up Mackinac. And it's a beacon of radio signals moving through the town. So we were being inundated by all the cell towers, you know, and cell services coming into Mackinac in this specific area. And it took research before I found out we were in a hot spot for that. And so debunked.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I've been out in the middle of the field, same thing. It's like,
yes.
I'm wondering, are there wires running underneath the ground here? How can I possibly be getting high EMFs out here?
There's a few reasons. One is, you know, you might be in a field, but you could be all around us are now cell towers sending signals across. If you have your cell phone, if you can call somebody on your phone is picking up a signal. There is so much of that right now that it's really making EMF consideration more of a challenge these days.
Yeah.
You know, my house is completely as quiet as anything can be, But I started picking up really huge EMF levels in my house, and I'm beginning to get nervous. And then I found out from an electrician, the reason for that is I have the Alexa. I have, my house is full of devices here. So it was all of the signals being generated by my computer, by my TV, by the Alexa devices that are setting off my EMF meters. So.
Okay. We did an investigation at the radio station here in Grand Rapids, and the EMFs were so high, you couldn't even get a reading.
And yes.
Yeah.
You know, that brings up a great topic. And that is, we need to come up with better equipment. You know, I mean, we need to have different equipment that an electrician, you know, a really well-educated electrician can evaluate where we're at right now and realize this might be different. Because I think there's too many false positives.
Right.
I do.
So we were talking about fear cage and how it can cause delusions. Yes. Hallucinations.
Yes.
And 3 to 5% of the people suffer from what's called EHS, electromagnetic hypersensitivity.
Yes.
And especially children. Mm-hmm. So if you go into a place where the children are affected, if you have high readings, I would think that'd be a good place to start.
It can be. I mean, you have to look at so many possibilities when you're experiencing high EMF levels. But yes, that can come from children. People with certain diseases generate higher levels of EMS as well. So objectivity and education is the bottom line.
Yeah, objectivity. Yeah, that's a hard one sometimes.
It is.
So we talked about intelligent. We talked about residual hauntings. Is there a third category?
Well, not really, not that I can think of. Have you heard of a third category? I mean, they're always coming up with new terms in the biz.
Right. Well, our third category would be probably shadow people, shadow creatures.
But that's
shadow,
not a recorded
beings,
audio recording, but I hear what you're saying.
Types of hauntings. I mean, the Duchesne's broke it down to 5 different ones. They talked about portal, they talked about hauntings that from
like a poltergeist of like
poltergeist.
Of people create, you know, their energy creating the haunting kind of a thing. I know that was one of the ones that they brought up.
Yeah, okay. Poltergeist.
I can't remember what the 5th one they said was.
Yeah, that was one of their 5 poltergeist.
Yeah.
Now,
even though a shadow could be residual, I mean, a lot of people see, for instance, a woman walking down the hallway every night at 3:00.
Right.
That doesn't respond. So that shadow person could be residual.
Yeah, it could be residual or intelligent, but it's always kind of those things because we don't really know enough of what's going on. So it's like, it's hard to tell. It's like it can be intelligent, but was it a ghost? Is it something from another dimension? Like, you know, is it an elemental?
That's a good point. People don't think about, are we always encountering a spirit or the consciousness of a once living person, or is it another entity living in another dimension, which I think is very, very possible, very possible.
Yeah, it'd be easy if all we ever ran into was an intelligent or residual entity.
Yes.
But there's so many other things out there. The djinn, I'm afraid, DJINN or JINN, that's like a genie and they'll grant your wishes. But good luck with that. It's not going to turn out good for you.
Yeah, if you get a djinn or djinn, just say, no thanks, I'm good.
Yep.
I don't need any wishes. I'm fine just the way I am.
All
they're like a lot of the different elemental ones. Because like,
there you go.
Some are good, some are bad, and you don't know which one you just made a deal with.
Right. You know? Right. And it depends on who you ask. Some believe all of them are bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the thing is with the paranormal community, so many theories and so little facts to back it up. I mean, facts, we do have some, of course, when you record a valid EVP, for example, that you can connect to history. But it's so open to conjecture that you don't know what it is. I mean, you don't.
Yeah, no doubt. We talked a little bit about validation. Have you ever been like, it's dark, you're there, you're asking questions, Have you ever like asked yourself, what the heck am I doing here in the dark talking to myself?
Oh gosh. I think if you are a paranormal investigator, all of us have thought the same thing many times on investigations,
no doubt.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, what am I doing? You know, and I've got to think of a different question to ask.
You know, yeah.
That's always one of the toughest ones is.
Yeah.
It's so hard to have a conversation where you don't know if you're getting a response or are right. or if you are getting a response, what is the response?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And you think of different things and it all comes back down to, do they want to communicate or not?
Yeah.
But I can see the places people have investigated for years and years and years. I can see the spirits going, oh gosh, here they come again. Let's see, how should I respond to that question today?
Yeah.
No doubt. I think, Brandon, conversation is an important term. You want to make it a conversation more than an interrogation.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Talk to them like you might someone, a stranger you just meet, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Or even like you would a friend, but just a regular conversation.
Right.
Now, you said we need better tools, and you talked about objectivity, you know, that can be tough. You also talked about what you would bring on an investigation.
Sure.
Your paranormal gear bag, you said.
Mm-hmm.
And you...
For those people who are new,
right,
or thinking about getting into paranormal investigation, don't spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars on equipment, because there's a lot of equipment out there that's costing several hundred dollars, or thousands, actually. The two most important pieces of equipment is an audio recorder and an EMF meter. And try and get an EMF meter that is not looking at direct current, which is the kind of current that comes out of microwaves or your cell phone. You want to pick up the natural EMF in the room, which would have, you could put your hand over the alternative EMF and you'll set it off. That's what you want. Those are the two most important pieces. And if you can't afford that other EMF meter, because those get a little pricey, just stay with an audio recorder and use yourself. Because you don't realize the most important tool in your gear bag is you.
Right.
It's what's up here. It's your eyes. You are the tool. So an audio recorder is your cheapest and best way. And frankly, if you can't afford to get an audio recorder, use your cell phone. But that's number one. And if you have more money, EMF meter is good. I have found thermo imaging is another piece of equipment I bring, only because it's looking at heat signatures in a room, which is really more specific than, possibly more likely to pick up a variance in the room ambiance, something beyond what we can see. Now, I have used thermoimagers, but in all honesty, you need to educate yourself on that, because there's a lot of false positives you can pick up with a thermoimager. If you have more money, a full spectrum is rather interesting, because that's looking at ultraviolet, which our eyes can't see. You know, the goal is to use equipment that we cannot see in this dimension, that goes beyond our vision or our hearing. So that's kind of the thing I look at. I know there's spirit box. A lot of people are using spirit boxes. I have used a spirit box. Controversy, I don't really believe in spirit boxes.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of people will disagree, and that's fine. You know, you, as an investigator, you make your own choices. But for me, it's stochastic resonance. You're picking up radio waves, little clips of radio waves going through the atmosphere. DJs are out there, people using cell phones, and still some people using walkies. You're picking up clips. Most of the EVPs I've heard on spirit boxes can be misidentified. It could be almost anything. But no one has clearly explained to me what makes sense, how a ghost or spirit knows how to manipulate the sound to really communicate. So I'm skeptical. If you do it, I'm good with that. You make your own choices.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah,
I would say, like, for mine, like, spirit box stuff, I don't consider it like solid evidence, but for mine, it's kind of a useful tool because I think there is a way that they can communicate it, because I've had personal experiences where I've had radios that weren't, that would turn on by themselves. Mm-hmm. Stuff would be communicated over it where I wasn't even doing like a spirit box. So that's why I think they can use it to communicate. Sometimes
how
you get some very
interesting
responses.
How do they do that, though?
I have no idea. Because, like, we had one case, like, we were investigating. It was Nick Finks. And the jukebox was unplugged, and the jukebox would turn itself on and start playing. Though there was no power going to it. One of the times after I investigated there, I got home. The stereo's there. All of a sudden, it has one of those, like, click knobs. You know, like, you click it and then turn it up. All of a sudden, it, like, unclicked, cranked all the way up. The stereo turned on and, like, cranked all the way up by itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I turn it back off. It does it again. Yikes. So I'm like, okay, what do
unusual.
I do now?
That's unusual.
So then I unplug it so there's no power source, and it still did it.
Wow.
Even without it being plugged in.
That's
so
unusual.
I'm like, I think they
kudos,
can use.
Kudos.
Yeah. I'm like, I think they can use
box.
Them. But yeah.
It's not a spirit box. That
it's
is
not.
An unusual event.
Yeah.
That is not. But that's what I said. Like, I think they do have an ability to at least to manipulate it. But again, like you're saying, like 99.9% of the stuff you get is going to be just radio. You're just getting clips from the different radio stations. Yeah, I think it's possible they might be able to communicate with it, but I don't consider it evidence. Same with like some of the apps
that.
And stuff like that. They might be able to manipulate it, but I cannot consider it evidence.
Yeah, some of the phone apps, they can be compelling. They can throw some stuff out there and make you wonder. But, you know, I was with you too. Thermal imaging, do you use a FLIR?
Oh, well, thermal imaging is a FLIR, I believe.
Use a FLIR. And then, I like the full spectrum, too. There's
what
different
else?
Cameras. The full spectrum that you said, I think, would be a useful tool.
Yes. And
nowadays, too, they got a lot of, like, cams that run off motion. I'm not sure if a ghost is going to be thick enough to set off a motion.
That's it. It has to be a fairly solid piece of energy to move through to set that off. So I don't use that.
You better have a supply of batteries in your bag.
Oh, my goodness. You got to have a ton of batteries. Now, some of these people, you know, you've got these little mini power banks. Very useful. Very useful on investigation.
Okay. And then a pen and paper to document.
Yes. You know, that's a lot of times investigators forget to do that. You know, if you record something, or if you think you've recorded something, or you've experienced something, you have to record that and, you know, provide a lot of detail. Where were you? What time was it? What was going on? And a lot of people forget about that these days. Yes.
Yep. A lot of the personal experiences you want down, the time, and then it's going to help you look it up, too, with you going back in your recorder about what time was that.
Right.
Yeah, that's important. I was with one guy. He recorded everything. He had a pen and paper, and he never stopped writing the whole time. That was with another team out of Detroit that I worked with. I never seen anybody document everything.
Well, I think that's a good idea, though, because that one person documented everything, where if, you know, they weren't necessarily paying attention to the details, but others were. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea, actually.
Yeah, and weather can be something you might want to put down, especially if you're seeing a bunch of orbs and it's rainy and a lot of moisture in the air.
Yes.
That's going to explain that away in a hurry.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then
you know my feelings on orbs, Wayne.
Yeah, I know. Orbs, you talk about orbs in your book. You define them, and they do show up at paranormal locations. And lots of them, but you just can't put any faith in. If you see them with your naked eye, is one thing. But if you're seeing it on a digital recorder or a still photo, forget it. There's no way of...
No. And even if you see it with your eyes, and I did see, an orb. I saw a flash of light appear in about 18 inches down from a ceiling. And it was bright. It looked like a sparkler on the 4th of July, the tip of a sparkler. And there were little bits of like electrical charge, and it moved across the room and disappeared about 3 feet above the ground. Even that is not necessarily a spirit. It is a particle of supercharged energy. And can one spirit be contained in that? Possibly. But my thought is, as an investigator now, if you see more of those and they come together, now that's something
right.
that could be valid.
Yeah, I liked about three different things happening at the same time.
Yes.
But in my bag, I'm going to have a compass. And I keep a compass right here on me because that'll tell you about the same thing as the EMF.
Yes, absolutely. It will. I used to carry a compass with me all the time. Yes, very good.
Yep. Yeah, so I like that. And you are going to have recorders, different. I have a couple different recorders that I like, digital recorders, because I can do different things with them. Some I can go back. Like I say, they do a little different.
Now, here's the thing. Some investigators, you know, they buy very expensive audio recorders that are very sensitive to sound. And, you know, it's great because it will pick up very low decibel. It's a very expensive audio recorder, too. But what they don't realize is it can pick up sound from far away. Other people in another room.
Right.
Or even in a field, if you're in a field, sound carries. You might not hear it, but this highly sensitive audio recorder will pick it up and people will think it's an EVP. So with a highly sensitive audio recorder, there are issues with that too.
And there is one too. There's like the one, it was like a recalled one. I can't think of the exact model number of it,
mm-hmm.
but like a lot of them, it'll pick up the recording of the internal mechanisms of the recorder as well.
Yeah.
Cause there's the one all these people are spending like thousands of dollars for, cause it was a recalled one, because like, oh, we can get it because it's one that it kicks on whenever you hear something. But it's picking up the internal recording, which sounds like an EVP, but it's actually the gears inside the
gears.
Recorder working.
Yes.
Wow, that's sensitive.
Yeah.
That is true. Good point.
Yeah.
We talked about putting a recording together of all the stomach growls.
Oh my God, that's another one that is a sure EVP, isn't it?
Yeah. No
doubt. Like I said, that was always one of my ones. Like, if you're doing an investigation, is bring some food with you.
Oh, see?
So that way, like, that's always one of the big ones that I actually give that people don't think about.
Yeah.
Is because you don't want to be listening to your stomach, because that's going to ruin all your EVPs. If you're hearing, because you can't tell, like, on the recorder, is this my stomach growl? Unless you're tagging it every time. But even mine, I don't hear all my stomach growls either. So.
That's
like, if I know my stomach's growling, I need to take a break and eat something.
That's funny.
But hold off, sir.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's what you eat that causes your
that
stomach
growl. That is true.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I had food on my list to put in my paranormal gear bag because Brandon and I, him and I, were always the ones getting in trouble for eating. But I'm diabetic, and he would come after work sometimes and hadn't had any supper. So, yeah, food I'm putting in my gear bag. And course, a flashlight. I mean, maybe more.
Oh, you
than
have
one.
To have that,
right?
You have to have that.
Usually, I'd have.
I don't. That's not even a second thought with me. It just goes.
Yep. So I think we got a pretty good gear bag put together there.
Did we mention cameras yet?
Well, she mentioned different cameras, full spectrum.
But even like thermal. Plane cameras are very helpful for mine. Even
Which
if you're
camera?
Not capturing, even like a regular,
oh,
like
right.
a camcorder, because like a lot of times I like to have it on us because it's not necessarily. Even to capture evidence, it's to help to debunk later.
Yes.
Because a lot of times when you're going back, you're like, oh, I think I got something. So then I play that same spot and I'm like, oh, okay, they said something there, but it didn't get tagged. Or, you know, like you can tell, okay, I can debunk this now because I have this on video.
Valid point.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
That's happened
really...
to us too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Video recorders, very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's used that to debunk.
Yeah.
Like you say. What was going on when that happened, and then look back at the video. Yeah. So I think
Or you think you're alone in the room, and then the video recorder will show, no, there was somebody else with me in there. Not a ghost. You know.
Yeah.
You talked about the interview and the personal questions that you have to ask on an interview sometimes aren't easy. When I started out, I think there was 2.5 pages of questions that they wanted me to ask. And as I'm asking, I got to some and I'm thinking, I can't ask these and these don't make any sense. And I added some, but I'm at a bar. I'm asking them if they drink alcohol. I mean, come on.
Moot point.
Brandon's on a team right now that they do more questions than anyone I've seen. And personal questions. They want to know when your menstrual cycle is.
That was back when they used to do like, when they were doing like the home cases and stuff. It's more for like evidence gathering of like the energy type of thing. That's not a question I would ask, but
I wouldn't
that
ask.
That was one
it.
Of the ones that they did have.
But that was on there. That was on their questions, and there is some stuff that relate to that, the cycle apparently. Mm-hmm. But it's not one that I could ever ask. But you talk, yeah. There's you asking them their mental state, whether they're doing drugs, you know, or whether they are alcoholic, what their religion is.
Like side effects of medications, because those are important ones
to know.
Those
are all valid points, but people will lie to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They will. I mean, I've had cases, residential cases, and they say, no, I don't drink much. And then you go in their closet and it's full of alcohol.
Yep.
So you can't always, it's good to ask those questions, first of all. Mm-hmm. The menstrual cycle thing, I don't know about.
You know? Look it up. There's something that's related to the paranormal about it. I don't know what it is.
Well, it is a paranormal thing, but I think that's probably not something I would even bother responding to. But,
yeah.
You know, mental illness, there was one person that said, no, I'm fine. And then I found out he was going to a psychologist and he had schizophrenia. Diagnosed schizophrenic. So it's like they won't tell you until you find out later, because it came through. He explained later. I said, I thought you didn't have any psychological problems. He said, I've been seeing this guy for, you know, a year. And I said, what's the deal? And he said, they diagnosed me with schizophrenia. And that's why you're seeing demons in your closet.
Yeah.
I didn't say that to him, but, you know, right away you're thinking, okay, the demons could be that.
I've looked up some of the drugs that people have told me that they're taking, and then they find out that cause hallucinations, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, it's hard to do a case like that.
It is. And with medications, we're not doctors. I don't know enough about medications. If some patient gives me a patient, if some client gives me a list of medications, I'm probably not going to go through all of them to see if it has delusional effects.
Oh, yeah. I have looked some of them up, right?
Wow.
Yeah, those can be tough. I mean, I would try to read the room or read the person. And yes. There's other questions that I added on, like, was there a recent death? Have you brought any artifacts, any antiques into your home recently?
Anything traumatic happened to you in the last year or so, whenever this started? Yes. But, you know, it doesn't have to. The problem is sometimes you do it like an interrogation. If you are just without a check sheet, if you just sit down with them over coffee and you just start a conversation, but you know the questions you want answered.
Yep.
And you just take some notes. But if you give them a checklist.
Yep.
It kind of turns them off, and that's not what you necessarily want to do.
Yeah, I've handed them a checklist before and they don't fill it all out anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I don't like the checklist. I got away from that once we started our own team. I didn't have to follow what my leader was telling me to do. Yeah, that can be tough. I always had to be the one that went through that. Now, you did a lot of commercial properties, but you also did like private investigations?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, there's only one residential case that was ever in a book, and that was Stepping Into Darkness, and that was crazy poltergeist activity. But most of the residential cases aren't in a book.
Okay,
those
right.
are private. Actually, probably the most important thing an investigator can do is go in to help somebody in a home. Because usually when they call an investigator, they're not looking for publicity and they are not looking to make money off of what you find.
Yeah.
They are afraid, and the investigator's role is to calm them down and find out seriously and very objectively if they can explain what that person is encountering, and then provide some kind of guidance and not just say, yep, your place is haunted, and then leave. So. A residential case is a very serious case.
Yeah, that's the best work we could do. I think so, too.
Yes.
You brought up Stepping Into Darkness again, your book.
Yes.
And then the one thing I was really impressed in here was with Marion Spore Bush.
Yes.
And she did these, she used the Ouija board by herself. So mm-hmm. you didn't need anybody to do it with her. And then, but she went into this automatic riding. That's what.
Yes.
And then she did World of Flame, which this is my interpretation of it.
Yes.
Which, but she said she couldn't give dates because the spirits there was no time in that realm.
Well, I mean, doesn't that make sense? You know, in our world, in our dimensional world, everything has a beginning and end. But the spirit world is more than likely in another dimension. The fourth dimension, of course, is time, which is a great example of what the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimension may be. We can't see time. In our three-dimensional world, we only know it exists because we get older. We see our children grow up. But in time, that dimension vanishes once we move forward. In string theory, it's believed there's, 11 dimensions. And at one point, there is no time and there is no space. It's everything is everything. And that's what Marion encountered in the spirit world. Everything is everything.
Another one of the paintings that she did was New York Wind, and it had the skyscrapers and on fire and stuff. Yes. So we now know Wind.
Yes.
9/11.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. I was so impressed with Marion.
She's remarkable.
And then she said the spirit would tell her, don't ask me questions. They're not interested in my wishes and wants. So I tried to use that on ghost hunting where I never ran out of questions. So that was hard for me just to keep my mouth shut and listen. But I think that's the best thing you can do when you're on an investigation. Keep your mouth shut and keep your ears open. That's why Brandon hears so many VPs more than anybody I know.
That could be very well, yes.
Well, the thing you got to take in is like for something in that realm, it's going to take them a lot of energy to muster up a response.
Yes.
So if you're asking one question after another, you might eventually get an answer, but you'd have no idea which question they were answering.
Right.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
If you're going on, yes, absolutely, yes.
Now, the Estes method, something new, where you blindfold, and I kind of like that because that makes it a little more legit, but we need
but
to move.
Still, yeah, you still have the issues because you're still using the spirit box.
Yeah, that.
So you're still getting 99.9% junk.
Yes.
But for me, like, I like it because, like, a lot of times, like, when I do it, some of the times when I do it, it feels like it more puts me in, like, that hypnotic state and opens me up to be able to pick more stuff up. Because I would start getting relevant stuff, but I wasn't hearing it over the radio. But it's like I could tune in to.
Coming into his mind, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
It's
something
interesting
different.
And it's different. You know, I think I like different things being used. The only issue with that method, the Estes, I can't pronounce it, method, is that we forget something called the subconscious. Mm-hmm. And that is subliminal messages from our past, from when we were quite young, that it's hidden away. And it could be triggering signals from our subconscious.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have to be aware of our own mental state. Not disease, but, you know, our own subconscious having an effect on that.
Yeah, that's like the nice thing about that is because you have other people asking questions because you're blindfolded and with the thing, so you don't know what they're asking you, too.
Exactly.
So, like, that's the thing I really like about it because, like, a regular ghost box one, like, everybody's, like that bias, like, you have, you know, like, because everybody's going to try, like, what's your name? So if you have anything that has somewhat of a name sounding thing, like, oh, it's Frank or whatever, you know, like,
okay, sure,
you know, because you have everybody sitting around and everybody's like one person, oh, I think it's this. Oh yeah, that's what it said.
Exactly.
Whereas if you have one person and they don't know what the question's being asked, then, you know, that's one thing.
Well, if you can really connect, then that's something that would be interesting. I have done that on cases I've investigated. Yeah. I've watched others do it. Nothing has come through relevant to the questions being asked.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I haven't found that to be a relevant source, though I applaud it because it's a different thing and it may be relevant. I just haven't encountered its relevancy yet.
Yeah.
Well, we got to wrap it up. So the final thought is just Ouija boards. I talked about Mary and how she used the Ouija board by herself. That's actually one of the warnings. Don't ever use a Ouija board by yourself. But have you ever used a Ouija board on an investigation as a tool?
No, never. I don't think they're creepy. I don't think they're going to call negative spirits. My thought is this. Anytime you call out to the spirits of the dead, anytime, you never know what's going to come back. And that is a fact. And that's what the Ouija board does. That is what any investigator does on an investigation when they're calling out. Yeah. It's just you have a device. But I don't use it. I just prefer asking the questions or sitting in silence.
Yeah, it's awful lot like conjuring. I know Ben Goldman of Afterlife Road used it, and they recorded it. I was getting nervous just watching the recording of it, the different things that were going on, and the warnings. Brandon, you ever going to use a Ouija board as a tool?
I have never used it. I probably wouldn't use it. But again, it's like the same thing. It is a tool. I think it could potentially be used, but there are issues with it because you don't know if somebody's moving it, because like you can move it without even realizing it.
Exactly.
Because like if your own body movement, same thing with like kind of like a dowsing rod's kind of a thing too. Like your body can end up moving even if you think you're being perfectly still. But yeah, that's always one of the big challenges with it. So like I personally wouldn't use it. I think it is a tool, but I think a lot of times it can be kind of dangerous because a lot of times people are playing it as a game and they're not taking it seriously. Oh. And I think that's a lot of times where you have a lot of the negative stories with the Ouija board is because it's
well, you also have people doing investigations and they consider it a game, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be more than a toy. I mean, I'm wondering if when you get the instructions, does it come with warnings saying that you might conjure an evil spirit? Does it say that in the instructions?
Because it's a toy. It's considered a toy.
Yeah. I don't know if it says that. But there was five that I found out. Never use alone. You must close each time. You must dispose of properly. And they're talking about burying it, not burning. If you burn it, it's supposed to have scream out. And then the other ones was never use in your own home and never use when you are ill or weak or it would take advantage of you.
I think that's kind of a good point for anything with like paranormal, because like a lot of times, like if you're a spirit and you have ill intent, you're going to prey upon it's like if you're like a wild, you know, like a lion with a herd, you're going to pick on the weakest one. Like it's the same.
We've kind of seen that in investigations where they seem to pick on the weakest one.
Yeah.
But it causes an addiction if you use it. It gives you wins. It's actually called progressive entrapment. You get a dependency on using this thing. Kind of like maybe tarot cards might.
Could be.
Yeah. Any upcoming for you, Kat? Upcoming things?
Oh, things coming for me. I will be at the Lakeview Library. Is that what you're talking about? Speaking?
Yeah, right.
In October, and I believe it's October 13th. Check my website for that. But it's October. And my website is hauntedtravelsmi.com. I will be speaking at the Mid-Michigan Paranormal Convention in November. I will be doing a book signing at the Oddities Festival in Charlotte, Michigan, September 2nd, Labor Day weekend. And then I will be doing an interesting session at the Farmhouse in Washington, Michigan.
Oh.
And you can check my website for that as well. So, and I'm researching a new book. So I'm totally absorbed in that right now too, and looking forward to getting it done.
Your books, Haunted Travels, are interactive with the web. People can go into a secret room and they can hear EVPs, different things.
Video.
In there. But you have an event on the day that Brandon's getting married.
Congratulations.
Friday the 13th, October 13th.
That's it, Friday the 13th. Well, perfect day to get married.
Yeah.
I think we're going to. We'll skip over our upcoming. We have so many. We're doing them. KDLs in October. We got seven different lectures coming up. We want to skip that. Go right into the inspirational thought.
Although if you are interested in knowing which dates Do check out the Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Facebook page.
Definitely. Our schedule's there. Get on our Facebook and you get our schedule. Now, I wanted to mention that Eloise, have you ever been to Eloise Psychiatric?
I really want to go there, but I have not had a chance to go yet.
Cats spend more time there than anyone I know.
Yeah.
I've been there a
lot. Bucket
list
item for me.
But before it was haunted.
Right. She had unique experiences there. But we want to go right into the inspirational thought. I like to make it significant to our guest.
Okay.
And it's very significant because it's in her book, and she's going to do the inspirational thought for us, and then that's going to be end the show.
Okay. This was a quote from a book called They, which Marion Spore Bush wrote, and at the end, her husband did a little conclusion, and this is a portion of what he wrote. And this is based on a belief Marion had that the true world is not here, but on the other side. And this is Irving's quote. But this I know, beyond this strife, there is no pain. Somewhere the flowers bloom again. Death is not death, it's life.
Death is not death. Death is not death. It's life.
It's life.
That's pretty heavy.
It's heavy, yeah. And it's true.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kathleen Rydell Tutson. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Kat, Brandon, good to see you again.
I just want to add on to what she said a minute, because like, I was listening to one podcast, they were talking about somebody that researches near-death experiences. And they talk about, like, when they go over there, like, they feel like they're waking up from a dream. Like, this life is the dream, and they're waking up to their reality.
Yes.
There you go.
After they pass.
Good point, Brandon.
Yeah.
All right. Peace out, everybody.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Family-owned Faro's Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Podcast, newly opened at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-483-0002.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.